and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 20th, 2006. Today's session is entitled Transforming Communities, presented by Jane Bald. Let's listen in.
So, welcome. I am Jane Balls, and I am delighted to be here talking about developmental assets. I can start sitting down, but the chances I'll stay sitting down pretty slim. Which we could think of as the basic building blocks for healthy development of youth. How many are here for the first asset class? Okay. So we will be touching on wanting to let these people kind of get a sense of what's going on here, and then we're going to move on to community change. So let's begin. Just a little background on me. I've had opportunities to do a whole lot of different stuff over the course of my life, from college teaching to 20 years as a freelance writer to current three-part job being the number one volunteer for Augustana College. My husband, who's the president of that college, is currently teaching a class on corporate responsibility, how to get corporations to behave responsibly. Okay, we're working on how to teach kids how to behave responsibly. If we get all the kids behaving responsibly, we won't have any problems with the corporations. Okay, but it's going to take a while, so I can see why they want to go to that class as well. I'm also, of course, continuing some with the freelance magazine writing, but also doing workshops and other various talks on developmental assets. The material I'm talking about in the handouts that you have are from Search Institute, which is based in Minneapolis. You should have a white sheet that tells about Search Institute, which was founded in 1958 with a mission of trying to find out what it is that kids really need for healthy development. Originally, it was looking only in a religious context, sort of with how do we raise our church kids right? But it is now looking, for the past 40 years or so, they've been looking at all kids and how can we change communities such that kids have a healthy place to grow up, and you know, how can we get individual people to become builders of developmental assets that kids need. And what Search Institute has done has been to do extensive research and also to garner extensive research on the subject. You'll want to pick up any handouts there that you don't already have. If anyone else comes in, just tell them that, okay? And I interrupted myself. They've been doing their own research with surveying up to 2 million kids up to now, and continuing with more and more communities come in and say, would you survey our kids and find out so we can have our own data? And they're also marshaling a whole lot of research that other people have done. There's a lot of research being done in the field, and it's, you know, well, what kids, one person is showing statistically that what kids really need is support from their families, you know, or someone else is showing that what one of the things that really counts is the values that the young person has. And someone else will do a study that shows, well, self-esteem really makes a difference. And what the asset approach does is say, yeah, there's a whole lot of things that we've learned make a difference. And what really makes a difference is the number of developmental assets that a young person has. And you have a sheet in front of you that has lists the developmental assets. It's on a green sheet. And those puts them in the categories to which they belong. Of course, by way of review, the categories are support, surrounded by people who love and care for the young person. So that includes family support, caring school, positive family communication, relationships with other adults than the parents. It includes empowerment, in the sense that believing that the community values youth. Take a look at the percentages over on the right-hand side. You see 22% of the kids surveyed, and since this is a good statistical sample, only 22% will think that their community values youth. Okay? So if the community does value you, the message is not getting across to the kids. You can't skateboard here, you can't skateboard there, and you know, no more than two young people allowed in this store at this time. And some of us did an exercise in here a couple days ago about the images of young people in the media. Okay, so does the young person think that the community values youth? Well, maybe not. Okay. The understanding that youth are resources, not problems. Okay, youth are resources, that they're given useful roles in the community, that they have opportunities to serve others, and those who serve in the community 1 hour more per week have a positive asset that counts. Safety, feeling safe at home. How do you feel safe at home if your parents are beating you? And how do you feel safe in the neighborhood? Okay, if there's gangs out there. So we're going to be talking about community change. How can we make it? How can we work with families? How can we work with neighborhoods? How can we work with communities so the kids feel safe and valued and supported? Okay? Boundaries and expectations, family boundaries, school boundaries, neighborhood boundaries, adult role models, positive peer influence, high expectations, all of those. But the kids do need boundaries, healthy boundaries. Take a look at constructive use of time, you know, creative activity, youth programs, involvement in the church, time at home with the family present. We're not going to have time at home with nobody else there, okay, after school, hours at home to watch TV because no one else is around, okay. But we're talking about time at home with the family, around doing family stuff, or just everybody's doing their own thing, but you're around being family, okay. All of these that we've talked about so far are the external assets. That is the ones that we can sort of build. They come from outside of the young person, okay? The relationships, the structures, the activities, all right? The others are internal assets, the rest of them, commitment to learning. You see a whole bunch of them having to do with achievement, motivation, school engagement, homework, bonding to school, reading for pleasure. Look at that, 22% of the kids read for pleasure, okay? You know, maybe 65% of them are motivated to do well in school, but only 55% of them are actively engaged in learning. So I do want to do well in school, but I'm not going to put any effort into it. Okay, well, where's that coming to? Positive values, you see them all there. Caring, equality, and social justice, integrity, honesty, responsibility, restraint. All of those are values. Does a young person feel these things are important? Okay. Social competencies, planning and decision making, interpersonal competence, having empathy, sensitivity, friendship skills. Okay. Cultural competence. How about feeling comfortable with people who are different? Okay. 43% of the kids surveyed have a cultural competence. Resistance skills. Of course, all of the like the DARE program and some of these others that work on teaching kids how to say, no, that's good stuff, okay? But it's not all, okay? You need not only resistance skills, but also the value of restraint, thinking that it's important, you know, to restrain yourself, to stay away from, like, the risk-taking behaviors, okay? Not only believe it's important, but also have the skills to be able to do so. Peaceful conflict resolution. And then a sense of personal power. Feeling that the young person has control over things that happen to them. Look at that. 42% of the kids believe that they have some control over things that happen to them. Okay? Do the math. All right? To think that we have 58% of our kids feeling that there's nothing I can do. It's all fixed. How are you going to succeed in life if you don't think that you can make changes? I'm going to get an education. You know, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to make a difference in the community. The community values you. Okay? Right? Self-esteem. Self-esteem is important. There have been, perhaps we've gone too far in our society thinking that self-esteem is like the be-all and end-all. Okay? Self-esteem is a fine thing. It's one of the 40 assets. Okay? But where does self-esteem come from? It's from actually being capable of accomplishing things. okay? And actually doing things and actually being of service and helping people and realizing, hey, I can really play the trumpet. All right? That's when you get your self-esteem. I'm doing well in school. That project was hugely difficult. I did it. I planned it, and I did it, you know? Okay? And a sense of purpose, you know? Feeling that your life has a purpose. Here we have about 57% of our kids in America feel that their life has a purpose. Okay? And a positive view of personal future. Now, this is interesting. 72% of the kids, that's one of the highest numbers here, perhaps the highest number here, have a positive view of a personal future. They're optimistic. Things are going to go well for me. Okay? And yet, only 29% know how to make a good decision, make a plan. Okay, now wait a minute. What is this? Basic youthful optimism, I guess. It's going to go well for me, even though I can't really affect anything. Somehow or other, it's going to work out. Well, okay, let's work on giving them the skills so it will work out. Okay? And, of course, well, what we've talked about is the power of assets to promote positive behaviors and attitudes. You can look at the charts there. Look at that. Look at the bar graphs there. The more assets you have, look at that, the 31 to 40, look what happens in terms of exhibiting leadership, maintaining good health, valuing diversity, succeeding in school. Look what happens if you don't have any assets, or you have very few. Okay? Oh, that one is on a kind of a light green sheet.
Okay.
It's a white one. Whitish, yeah, nearly white. Okay, off-white. Okay, look at the bar graphs. Everybody got some? Okay, you see what's going on there. And what happens with assets? The more assets you have, what?
Better you do.
Okay, and then look at the part about protecting youth from high-risk behaviors. What do you see there? What surprises you? Look at that. You want to keep your kids off drugs? Build their assets. Of the kids who have 31 to 40 assets, 1% can go on drugs, okay? My daughter she's a great gal. You'll see her, she's 15. She's been serving down in Narnia every morning and working with the kids. And, you could go through the assets. You know, we've been building them over the years. We didn't always use that language. Okay, we've been building the assets. And she could go through, and I'm sure she falls in that category, at least 31 to 40, okay? And when we say, well, now, Angie, maybe we better sit down and have a talk about drugs and alcohol, because I know better than this. My husband will say this once in a while. He's like, Dad, why would I want to do that? Okay, because she's had the developmental assets built. And so, you know, it's the same thing with violence and gang membership, you know. If you feel your family loves you, you feel loved, empowered, you know who you are, what you stand for, you want to learn, you want to help people, why would you join a gang? Okay?
Because that's what they're looking for, is the sense.
That's right. That's exactly right. Belonging. These are my guys. We're together. We belong. Okay? And we're going to go over against those guys, and we're going to fight for our turf. Right? Well, why would you do that? If you see what the violence, how it drops so dramatically when young people, look at that, 62% of the kids who have 0 to 10 assets get involved in, it says, 3 or more acts of fighting, hitting, injuring a person, carrying a weapon, threatening physical harm in the past 12 months. Look at that, 62%. Okay? Now, questions. Go.
Well, just an observation. These percentages come from self-reporting.
Ah.
So what your institution is, or this institution is doing, is focusing on how young people view themselves vis-a-vis these issues.
That's right. That's right. So they may say, for instance, you say, you look at number one and number two, and this is very consistent across the country, across age groups. Asset number one, family support. 68% say, yes, I have good family support. Okay. Positive family communication, 28%. Okay, they love me, but would I seek advice and counsel? No way. They're idiots. Do you have anybody have young teens, teenagers? How many of you are idiots? I'm an idiot. I've got a 15-year-old.
I have 38-year-old children. I'm still an idiot.
I'm sorry. That usually improves once they have families of their own.
I mean, not only on every issue anymore.
Yes.
I think certainly
there's an element of your parents don't understand what I go through in my generation.
Somebody was starting to say.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I believe Surgeon Institute is pretty convinced that this reporting is accurate to the factual. They're all blind studies, and I believe they say our experience is that if you give kids anonymity, they tell the truth.
The other thing is that they have test questions. There's about five of them in there because kids screw around when it's anonymous. Sometimes they tell the truth, sometimes they don't. But there's test questions. Now, I wish I knew the rest of the test questions. Pardon me, those of you who heard me say this before, but on the list of, how many, have you taken this drug, how many times in the past, okay, they've got a drug that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Okay, kid says he's taken it, that survey's gone. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it might be, when they did our youth in the Quad Cities, we have about 8,000 good surveys and about 500 that they just threw away. Or filed, or whatever. They didn't use them in the statistics because you could tell that these kids were just horsing around.
Well, I guess my point, though, is not so much that there might be some that needed to be voided because of lack of integrity, but rather that what we're measuring is not the situation. What we're measuring is the child's perception.
Well, that's true. And you know what? That's important. How important is a child's perception of support? Okay? That is, if your family loves you, but you don't think they love you, because they're always telling you what a lousy kid you are, I wish it, would have been, sure was a lot freer when I didn't have these darn kids, if you're always complaining about the kids, or running them down all the time, and you've heard parents, right, talk to their kids that way? How are they going to think they're, oh, but I love you. Yeah, right.
I wouldn't disagree that the child's perception of that is really, in many ways, the central issue in terms of development. But I think those of us who've had more than one child recognize that the same message, or what we believe to be the same message, gets perceived differently by different children. So there are some personal variables that are at work. I'm not sure that helps us in terms of looking at how to work with this material, but probably important to remember.
It is. And in schools, for instance, 29% believe that their school provides a caring, encouraging environment. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, I'm willing to bet that 95% of the teachers do care about the kids. There's some who are just marking time. But I'd say at least nine. How many of you are teachers here? Was that fair to say that they really do care about the kids? But do the kids know that you give a hoot, that you care about them, that you're interested, that you want every single one of them and you believe in them?
No, not necessarily, because a lot of times we're doing things, we have state tests in Texas. A lot of times I sometimes feel like, no, we're not teaching for the test, but we do have accountability. And
that's right.
They do clean the slate, and there's all kinds of ramifications. A lot of times it's what the principal, where she puts her money, but a lot of it is, I'm going to do my doggonest. These kids are going to pass, and I want you to pass, and I want you, and it's something. But yes, I love them, and I want them to succeed. But a lot of it is riding at the other end, because if we don't do this, then it's just...
So well, that's right. And one of the things, that talking to teachers, I always want to reassure teachers this is not a program.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's an approach.
Yeah.
So it's a way of treating kids, knowing their names, calling them by names, knowing some things about them, like a good teacher always does. And if you're saying, hey, I really wish we could do that, but I know we got to do this, and if we get through this, then we can do that.
Right.
However you want to do it, but even if you're working together to meet a goal that none of you feel like meeting, but you need to, you can still do it in a caring way.
Right.
And it's a lens, it's an approach, and we'll talk more about. School kinds of things, but it's really important because teachers have so much they have to do, so much curriculum, and it's not. But it's sometimes in a lesson plan. If there's two possible ways of going about it, do you do the one that builds asset, maybe gets the kids involved, gets them taking some responsibility for it, or you do the one that sit down and shut up and let me tell you how it is. Okay, sometimes you can choose which one you choose. how do you focus the you know, is a good teacher, you know, there's many ways of getting at
you,
what
you principal called last year was like, primarily because of maybe the year that we had, but the previous, but in the fact of the added growth. And that was, she didn't just say added, it was the added measure. I mean, because when you test them one year and you test them the next and you think like, okay, they went down, well, what have we actually, what was our added? What are you getting, you know, enough measure? And you think, well, it's not just in statistics, it's also in other aspects. And that will come out later. But it was just that added, you know, value added. That's what it was, the value added. And that was really reiterated so much last year that we hadn't previously gone over in other years. And that gets into, you know, the assets.
Right. How many of you seen The Music Man? Everybody? Someplace or other?
Okay. How many of us have been in it?
Hey, we got trouble. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
It's a family favorite of ours.
But I looked at it, I don't know how many times have I seen the different productions, and I've heard the tape, you know, seen the movie, but looked at it this summer, again, through an assets lens. Let's think about Harold Hill. Okay. Harold Hill comes in, he's a flim-flam man, but he gets people's confidence, and, of course, at the end, he's giving up being a flim-flam man, right? So he comes in, take a look at your assets. Okay, basically, at the end, after he's gotten all kinds of things have happened, all right, at the end, the community is about ready to say, let's lynch him or let's run him, you know, tar and feather him and ride him out on the rail because he was lying and he was just a no good salesman and there's not going to be any band, or so they say. And then what happens? People start saying, right, think about our community. What was it like before? What's it like now? Okay, is there anybody here who doesn't think, if there's anyone who doesn't think, that we should, you know, we should run this guy out of the rail. Stand up now. And bit by bit, of course, they start standing up. One of the first is the mayor's wife. You know, sit down. Stand up. And they, bit by bit, different ones whom he has affected. Stand up, okay? And it ends up, you know, with love and happiness. And I always think there's a band, kid. Okay, and then lo and behold, the thing systems work and the kids can play. Sort of. All right. Now, take a look, and let's talk about The Music Man. Let's start going down the list, and you tell me, and you just say, asset number what, and tell me what happened. As you remember The Music Man, which assets are Harold Hill building? I know it's fiction, but let's just pretend, okay?
Well, family has to invest in the child.
That's right.
Purchases something for the child with an expectation.
Okay, so family support, getting the kids, the families to... to invest in their children, okay?
Right. Number 8.
All right.
Using youth as resources.
Uh-huh.
Well, especially with the, you know, the one kid he had take over for him to teach them.
Tommy.
That's right, okay. Now think about Tommy Jollis, because the mayor will contrast. Mm-hmm. What was the mayor always telling him?
You're no good kid.
You're no good kid. You get away from my oldest daughter. Right? Because he's from the Lithuanian community on the other side of tracks, and they're all no good. You're no good. Get away. You're no good. All right. Well, what do you feel like? How do you behave if people are telling you you're no good?
Like a no good?
You might as well act like a no good, Nick, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, what does he say to Tommy Jollis? Do you remember? He said, hey, Tommy, I want to talk to you. Oh, that band, that's just for the little kids. No. Remember, you ever do anything mechanical? Oh, yeah. So he recognizes. I think I've got it too. Okay. So here for the first time, everybody else in town sees this kid who's doing the things with the firecrackers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, underneath the ladies who are trying to sing and that sort of stuff. But anyway, everybody else is seeing that. He's picked up something from him and saying, I bet that kid, like a lot of kids his age, likes mechanical stuff. Okay. You do that? Okay, well, here's the problem. Nobody has ever been able to come up with a music stand for a marching piccolo player. And do you think you could do that? Oh, you know, I think I could. And off he goes. And next thing you know, I mean, the kid starts, as the movie goes on, he's getting more and more responsible. Why?
Well, he's taken an interest in it.
He's empowered.
It's also a high expectations. Number 16.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Somebody expects something from him that's positive.
That's right. So here he is. He has a chance for service to others because eventually he's put in charge of a little section of the van. You keep it going. Here, Tommy, I got to go deal with this other thing. Okay, so here he is. He's a youth as a resource, service to others. Okay, what else are we seeing?
Creative activities.
Okay, they're involved in music.
17.
Okay, creative activities.
Programs.
Okay. All right, youth program, the band.
He's also starting to develop some integrity, Tommy is.
Yeah.
And he stands up to the mayor eventually.
That's right. That's right. We don't want to go. We're going steady. We don't want to go steady and behind your back, sir. We want to go steady in front of your back.
Yeah. And honesty. You know?
Okay. All right.
And that would also influence 37, this sense of personal power and having some control over what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has now a new purpose, day number 39. He's not just a hoodlum. He has actually something important to do.
All right. Asset building begins very young. Let's think about the little guy, little Winthrop. Okay, remember, he come in, his dad died, and he's upset about it. He's only, you know, 6 years old or something. And he's got a lisp, too, and so that's a problem. And what happens?
He never talks. Hardly ever talks.
Okay, what does Harold Hill do with his kid? Remember?
Gives him an instrument.
Okay, he gives him an instrument. Will it have a... He doesn't want to say, let's say, stripe. You know, it's going to have a... It's going to give him a... You too can play in the band. So, yeah, so bringing him into the creative activity and the youth program and all of that.
He also took him fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And talked to him.
Gary, Indiana.
That's right. That's silly stuff. But it meant a huge amount to this little kid. Okay, other adult relationships, right? That's important. Number 3 is critical, that the young person has support from other adults. Okay, Sunday school teacher, whoever else.
Well, and parents deal with their kids differently. You know, Harold didn't let the fact that Winthrop had the lisp stop him from teaching him a song.
That's
whereas
right.
Other people kind of protected or, you know.
Wouldn't even try.
Right?
Okay, that's cool.
Pushed him.
All right. And then among the rest of the town, you think about the school board that we're always fighting. Talk about peaceful conflict resolution. Let's turn these people into a barbershop quartet. Okay. All right, and getting the ladies involved in the planning and decision making. You know, where they get the ladies and the dance.
Like Grecian urn.
Yes, we could.
The rest of it. Remember, there's this great big scene toward the end because he's been teaching the other kids dance steps, okay? And this shaboopy, and there's this fabulous, you know, the movie, they've got this fabulous scene, this whole choreography number. But here he is, here's all these other nameless kids in the town, but they have an opportunity to, you know, be involved again in, you know, in the arts, their, you know, creative things, this organization, there's all that kinds of structure, and they're excited, they're really pumped. Oh, no, can we do shaboopy? And then here's the guy, you've got this relationship between the Buddy Hackett character.
Marcellus.
Yes, Marcellus.
He's my boyfriend.
Okay, and he's there, he's doing something with the kids. So it's not just segregating, sending the kids over there, but Marcellus is in there, where, you know, he's doing the singing, the shaboopy, and the kids are dancing. And so you have relationships, again, with other kids. And so you can do the whole role model thing. But here's Marcellus. He's a respectable citizen, you know. He shoes horses for a living, you know. But he cares about the kids, and that's important. And part of the message here is that anyone can be an asset builder. Okay? All right. Now, what we've been talking about here is the power of one. And one thing we did yesterday, we had a big bunch of 27 people over in the other room, and we started talking about circles of influence. Okay, and we took a little target shape, and you put your name in the middle, and you write down, you know, what are my circles of influence? You know, where do I have the most influence with kids? Do I have family? in the church, in, well, see, I run this, I'm a teacher, I'm a, you know, I run this youth program, I'm a scout leader, wherever it is that you run into kids, even if it's just the kids down the street, you know, maybe your circle of influence is your own neighborhood, okay? Neighborhood boundaries, you know, it's important to have people in the neighborhood who are watching out for the kids, who know their names, who belongs to whom, and if that little kid is not supposed to be, you know, supposed to be out so far. Okay, so that's the power of one. We looked at, we talked about that. Everybody selected an area, a particular, we had a group of teachers, we had a group that were interested in school, the school context, we had some interested in community programs, some interested in family, even if it's, I've got this niece, I don't have any kids myself, but I got this niece and nephew, you know, that I want to be. Do some answering. You know, everyone can be an asset builder. In fact, sometimes the ones who don't have kids are the ones who've got the energy to help other people's kids. You know, so there's a lot of people, oh, I'm not going to do that. I don't have any kids. Or I don't have the kids at home anymore. Well, that's okay. Okay, so when then people, you know, talked about and everybody identified one thing you could do for asset building. That's all talking about the power of one. All right, now imagine you have a dozen people in your community, maybe in your church, let's say, who are interested in making a change. How about 100 people? How about 1,000 people? Okay? Now imagine what happens if you do asset building with the power of many. Okay? And what we want to get to today is changing, is community change. Okay? Let's talk a little bit about what kinds of areas, what might you want to change? Where could we have more asset building going on?
Churches.
Yeah. Churches are the most age-segregated institutions in our society, or just as age-segregated as any place else. Now, what's up with that? Here we've got all these intergenerational possibilities, right? Yeah. But if 17 teenagers over there, and preschoolers are here, you know, and then never the twain shall meet, right? Okay, so there's all this possibility. So churches are one. Okay, where else might we be able to do some asset building around here?
How about just athletic organizations, soccer teams?
Okay,
sports teams.
We had a coach yesterday, and an influential young coach. I mean, he's going to do training of coaches, because a coach can have a huge difference. You know, a good coach. Y'all know the wrong kind of coach.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, you know, have known the wrong kind.
Well, I talked to him after your class,
yeah.
And I was sharing with him something that happened with our soccer team that was very influential, and he said, oh, that's awesome. He said, I do the same thing, and then he said, and I also never said the word, the W word, win, in the 6 years that I've been coaching, and they've been three times distinct. The example also that I gave him was that our team has, over the years, always at the end of the game, after they shake each other's hands, then lines up on the field and goes walking towards the stands and claps for the fans and parents and people
nice.
Who come, whether they've won or lost.
That's cool. That's nice.
Yeah.
So, school, we can change our... How about schools?
Schools.
Schools. Entire schools can adopt the asset approach, okay? And a lot of teachers are pretty resistant to it. It's another thing. It's the program, it's the flavor of the day. Good Lord, what do we have to learn now, right? And I work with teachers sometimes. Some of them get excited, some of them say, oh, geez, this is bad advice. One teacher told me, that, you know, it's sort of a group of coaches, you know, old boys sitting up in the front taking pot shots. Oh, geez. But schools can get on looking at the positive side, looking at youth as resources, not as problems. By the way, the assets have been translated for younger kids, even babies and toddlers. I can make copies of some of this stuff. I gave out almost all of it, but I've got some of it that I can make a copy if you want to know the assets as described for grade school kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all available. And little ones, preschoolers, and so forth. So what would it mean to start building assets for a toddler? Okay? Because you know it doesn't happen immediately. And you also know that this stuff isn't new, right?
No.
The best teachers, the best parents, the best coaches have been doing it forever, right? And this is just a way of looking at it. This is just an approach. It's a language that we can use. But if we've got, imagine a community, and some communities have done this, where they're getting the word out to the entire community. Okay? So you've got businesses on board. Okay? Businesses that are maybe doing their employee newsletters, that they're sending out assets message because the employees are probably parents. Okay? Maybe the business is setting up some awards for kids. They're recognizing people in the community within their business, employee, asset builder of the week. Okay? Maybe the business is funding some asset building kinds of things, like we're really getting behind Big Brothers Big Sisters. Okay? Or, this is what they've chosen. I know of a hospital where they go in and they do mentoring. They get time off of work to go and do mentoring in a grade school. Okay? And so it's like during the lunch hour, you go in and you sit down with your one kid. And I was talking to a guy. The kid had no idea that this guy's president of a hospital.
We have junior achievement in our school. Anadarko and Exxon do a real big thing. And they don't just do it in our Title I schools, but they really, we also have a mentoring program. But these are people, we do this starting at the beginning, and it's amazing the people, they put on lunch for us at the beginning of the year, but all our persons that we work with in Anadarko, it's just amazing. We have the lawyers, the engineers, the last 2 years I had the person that's the nurse, and just all kinds of people that come and donate their time. And, I had accountants, two lady accountants that came and was in my classroom, and they're going to be going off to Algeria for, and they couldn't be with me for a week, and they were saying, what are you going to be doing? What are you going to be doing out there? And then expressing those kinds of things, that these are things that you can work towards. Oh, no, I can't. That tall building, that's where I work, And they pass by it all the time on I-45 coming out of the Woodlands to Texas, to Houston. And it's just amazing. Just the kids go, that's where you come from, that's where you are. And, what do you do? And then they came, and she, the last day of school, she brought every one of our kids in my class handwriting booklets. I mean, just, the wipe-off board things, and printing and cursive, because she said, it's very, very important. Some of you are going to be having jobs in 5 or 6 years, and this would be something you could do over the summertime. And then she gave them, and it was just, it meant so much to them. Cool. I mean, the year before, it was like a Christmas tree that she gave, and then she came and brought them pizza and cookies, and she's, we wondered, you said you were going to come back, we haven't seen you. She said, something happened, and we're so glad you came, just enough to care about the community, people coming out and taking their time to come out and do a part.
So that's one person.
That's right.
We get more.
That's
more
right.
People
and building, the kids
company.
Are beginning,
and
you got a bunch of them.
The whole company does this.
And the whole company does this. That sounds like community values youth.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
yeah.
You can say, whoa, you work there, you're coming to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, that's
yeah.
really something, right? Okay.
Just real quick,
yeah.
our community has their own program throughout all of the schools, elementary, junior high, and high school. And it's the high school students who come to the elementary and the junior high kids.
Oh.
And that is so cool. My son thinks it's just so cool to play with these high school kids.
Oh, they're practically gods.
They start at second grade.
Oh, that's fabulous. Just fabulous. Because one of the things we can think about is that the asset approach is not just about adults doing things for kids. It's kids taking responsibility, first of all, for their own assets. When you can teach the asset approach to kids, all right, so that they can look at it and say, well, I've got that relationship with any other adults than my parents, Maybe I will, that nice lady who keeps at church who keeps offering to take me out for ice cream, I think I'll do that, And the kids could take responsibility for making sure that they have their own assets are being built. Maybe I won't drop out of Scouts because I see it's, it matters. But they can also influence younger kids. Okay, well, through their own service work, and service is good for the high schoolers, and building relationships and all that kind of stuff, and it's fabulous for the little kids, And then it also they could become asset builders for their peers, like saying, oh, now come on, let's not get involved in that. Help their own peers, their own friends, to turn out right because of their own influence, because positive peer influence matters. Okay. All right. Now, in any kind of change, it's really important to think about, to get all of the sectors involved, okay? In a community, for instance, suppose you want to bring it into the whole community. A number of them have done. Denver is one. I was just talking earlier. He left before you guys, most of you got here, but a fellow named Matt from Bellingham, Washington, he's involved with the Kitsap County has taken on the asset approach as a countywide initiative, and they've got a bunch of people working on it. And he's out as kind of an asset activist, and he's working on, and he can channel county money to groups that are doing asset building things. So he's out there getting the message out. You're doing an after school program? That's an asset building kind of program. Money. So, you know, just think what happens if you get the government, if a city were to take it on, okay, businesses, if the businesses, okay, what other sectors are out there in a community?
Clubs.
Okay. Now, some of them, like the Boy Scouts, have been doing asset building, and the Girl Scouts, very consciously, they this is the model that they work on. They talk about it. They're really into it. So the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Boys and Girls Clubs, Big Brother, Big Sisters. So, but they could get on board using the language and help reach the parents of their children that they work with.
Yeah,
okay?
See, I was thinking more like Rotary, where there service might not be as many kids service clubs. It's mostly adults. But get them on board so that they're...
Then they can maybe take the message back to their business and their employees. Okay, great. What else is out there? Okay. Well, communities often have social service agencies working with kids with all kinds of problems. Okay? And we're looking at kids as resources, not as problems, but a lot of them do have problems in addition to lacking assets. So how can you get an asset-building model in with the people who are working with the violent kids? I'm on the board of an agency that's got a specialized house for young people in our community who have alcohol abuse or substance abuse plus some kind of violence. And there's kids involved in sexual violence because of where they came from. There's kids. Kids coming through the homeless shelters, through the domestic violence shelters, and there's all these kinds of services that a lot of cities have. Okay, we get our social workers on board with this. You know, that's one of the things that I've been working on. You know, to help them understand. Like one of them, for instance, is our agency has been defining some of its programs, and it's testing all of the kids for the assets. And they're measuring their outcomes with the asset model. And so they're doing a survey of the kids, and then they're doing this in-home work, helping the parents to understand, to learn. Sometimes parents don't want to come to workshops because they don't want to admit that their kid has problems, or that maybe their parenting is inadequate, but they're approaching as, this is not just for problem kids, this is for all kids, okay? We're shifting, we talked about shifts a couple days ago, about we're shifting from talking only about problem kids, we're talking about all kids. All right. So they are, we get our social. They'll do their programs. They're sort of in-home intervention kinds of stuff with the kids that might have been sort of falling through the cracks. And then they're going to do the sort of asset survey again after a year, after two. They're going to take that back to the funding and say, okay, look, here's the asset approach. Here's where we were. Our kids have moved up to assets. You know, it's not huge. You can't jump. You have to be realistic about this. Okay. So. Darn. What I wanted to do is break into groups according to the area that you want to change. But I don't think we're going to have time to do that, because I want to talk about congregations. There's a handout there. Most of you are probably in a church. And there's stuff that a church can do to get, for instance, adults and youth working together. You know, like doing a service project with everybody together, adults and youth working together, because think of all the assets that builds. All right, youth as resources. You can just go down the whole list of them. There are things congregations can do to make an effort to, adults to know the names of the kids and call them by name. You know, do we shake hands and with each other and ignore the kid down there? You know, do we say, no, you kids get out of that parlor? Parlor is adults. You can't be in there. Do we give them, do they get the sense that the congregation values youth? Do we give them the worst room in the church with the worst furniture and call that the youth room? Okay? All right. What would it take for them to get the message that the congregation values youth? You know, do we have people who are sending them, nice little notes once in a while? There's all kinds of things. And there's also a handout there if you're Sunday school teachers in here. There's one, if you're a Sunday school teacher, religious educator, there's a hand up. There are things you could do in your own classroom as you're approaching kids. But in the congregation, now, what are the sectors in the congregation? Let's think about that, just so we get a small, and we all get sectors. What are the sectors in the congregation? For instance, you got the pastor, right? You've got the
council members.
The council members. You've got your council. So is your council on board with this? Is this good? I mean, you can have a power of one, you know, and you can do like adult classes on this, but can you get the council on board with this? This is an asset-building congregation. Okay? You've got what other sectors?
Volunteers.
You've got some volunteers, okay. Like the youth volunteers, you've got the people who put out, you know, who always are, you've got, how about the WELCA, or whatever the women's group is? Okay, how do they treat youth? You know, are the kids welcome to come in and use the kitchen, for instance? Okay, do you have, you know, if you're setting up a potluck dinner, what are the attitudes toward kids? Okay, and then why is it important? Why does it matter? Because I think most of us really want our kids to grow up healthy, okay? And we're, you know, worship together is so important. It's one intergenerational thing we do together. So let's be careful that we don't say, we got adult worship over here, and we got children's worship over there, and get these kids out of the sanctuary so we don't have to have those darn kids making noise in worship. Okay, they need to learn how to worship. I can get on my high horse about that. But, okay, so there's all these things. I mean, you know, is the choir. Like, one of the things I'm thinking about, I've got a choir that meets, I'm in the church choir, I sing tenor, that meets on Wednesday evenings at the same time that the LYO, the Lutheran Youth Organization, meets for their regular thing. I'm thinking, and their choir is getting older. And what would happen, suppose once a month, we had, after choir got out, sometimes we'll go down to celebrate a birthday or something with, you know, with cookies or cake or something like that. Suppose we had the kids come down, invited to come down, and we did a thing where you had one or two kids with every one or two adults, okay? And you sit down and eat your cake together and learn each other's names and talk to each other, because the adults may be thinking, those old fogies, they have no idea what fun those old fogies had when they were young. You know, we could have a topic of discussion, like about pranks, you know, or something like that. You know, there's all kinds of fun things. We could do faith-building stuff, too. Maybe the first one, a couple might be pretty light, and just realizing, oh, we have more in common than we thought. Okay?
We had a mentor-mentee program in one of our churches where, beginning in sixth grade, the person chose a person in the congregation without them knowing to be their mentor. And then whoever, the youth director went to that person, didn't tell who the kid was, but said, you've been chosen by someone in the congregation to be a mentor. Would you accept that role? So it wasn't like, okay, there was never a feeling of, well, I will accept this kid but not that kid. But it was, you know, that kind of thing. And you just simply met with that child however much you wanted to. And then there were oftentimes large group events where mentors and mentees would get together, and it lasted. It was a relationship that went from sixth grade all the way through high school.
Wonderful.
And it was the best thing I've ever seen. And I tried to get it going in the church that we're in now, but I just can't get any interest in it.
Expectation was once a month for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the sort of thing where if you did, say, an adult education class on assets, or went and did a presentation to the council on assets and said, this stuff matters. Okay, what can, you know, can we get on board with this council? How can we do this? You know, how can, you know, maybe start with the pastor. Sometimes it helps to get the pastor on board, then the council on board, and then, you know, then you go to your education committee. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can do it, but it helps to have the statistics, okay? Which is why a lot of communities have brought in the Search Institute to do their own youth, okay? So when I talk to groups in the Quad Cities, which is, you know, Illinois, Iowa, and the Mississippi River, I can say, here's our data. This is about our youth. Do you realize that? On the flip side of your green sheet, you can say that, how many of our kids do you think have 31 to 40 assets? 8%. And 31 to 40 is what they need to thrive. 8% of our kids. And that's our kids, because surely our kids are better, you know, right? In our community, because we love our kids, we take care of our kids. Well, guess what? You know, do you realize that 56% of them have fewer than 20 assets, and what's that going to do for them in life? And it gets people's attention when they realize things like this bar chart, that they're losing assets as they get older, rather than gaining them, Okay, that's something worthwhile. Okay, let's talk about resources. Okay, if you want to do something with this, Peter Benson, who's president of Search Institute, who was in the videotape that a lot of you saw, All Kids Are Our Kids, which is an excellent concept in itself, right? All kids are our kids. And the more that the community know, I'm not voting for a school levy because my kids are grown. No, all kids are our kids. But anyway, now this book is about 10 years old, so the research has gone on since then, but the basic things are the same. And he goes into, of course, explaining the whole structure and why it mattered and how the research is done and so forth, how it got that way. There's a lot of stuff on strengthening families. Like if you had a job that involves trying to get the word to parents, you know, and trying to help them instead of playing the blame game on who's responsible. Okay, here's our situation. How can you help do something positive for your own kids? Getting parents on board. How to get schools on board. How to get the various clubs and those kinds of organizations on board. And then the role of all the sectors in the community. There's stuff on business and all kinds of stuff here. So that's worthwhile. There is, if you wanted to revolutionize your community, okay, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Search Institute has, and you can take a look at this catalog. If I didn't have to bring it over on the ferry, I would have brought you a rolling backpack full of books to look at, but you can look at them in here. And this is all available online, search-institute.org. It's on the bottom of all your pages there. But for instance, here's a book, Assets in Action, which is a handbook for making communities better places to grow up. It covers all those questions, you know, like where does change begin, who's involved, what needs to be done, how do you establish change from the very first steps to the later stages, accessible, engaging, easy to read. And then they've got Putting Assets in Action, a 12-page booklet called Putting Assets in Action. These are available in packs of 20, so you can get those. Here's the Asset Activist Toolkit with handouts and resources for putting assets. You know, suppose you wanted to redo your community. You want to revolutionize your school with assets and start the fall with them fresh. There's a book. There's a number of resources for teachers in here. Here's the Hidden Treasures Asset Game, Strength Cards for Kids, Powerful Teaching, a Quick Start Guide to Building Assets in Your School. Pass It On at School, activity handouts for creating care at school. So there's all this stuff. There's a packs of that you can get. I gave out. Oh, by the way, does anyone have the 150 ways you can show kids you care?
I've
got a copy. Can I? If you have it, I want. Like, there's a woman who wanted one, didn't get one. It's a neat little booklet, the little fold-out thing, which you can get in packs of 20 from Search Institute. But I told her I'd see if I gave away my last copy. I told her I'd try to make a few copies. For those of you who got it. Okay.
Like one too.
All right. You'd like one too. Okay. I'll see if I can get hold of those. It's just nice little ways. There's a handout over there on how to create caring relationships with kids. It's, you know, it's brief. But anyway, that's as much as we can do. For now, there's a whole lot that can be done with this. And if you're, be an asset builder yourself. But if you want to get more involved, there's a whole lot we can do to make change.